from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, Governor Jerry Brown has declared the prison emergency over in California. He's asked the federal court to lift the population cap it imposed on state prisons and to remove federal oversight of inmate medical care.
We've gone from serious constitutional problem to one of the finest prison systems in the United States.
The governor has said that further reducing the population would jeopardize public safety. We'll analyze the state's progress on prison reform and discuss the best path forward with a panel of guests. First, we'll check in with Governor Brown. That's all up next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. At a press conference yesterday, California Governor Jerry Brown declared the state prison crisis due to overcrowding over and petitioned the court to end the cap on the prison population, which was imposed by three federal judges back in 2009, and also to end federal oversight of prison medical care. And late Monday, the governor had presented a plan in U.S. District Court, which he characterized as being submitted under protest, which would further ease the crowding in the state's 35 prisons. This morning's opening Forum Hour, we discussed the state of the state's prisons, the governor's fight, and what lies ahead. And joining us from the state capitol is Governor Jerry Brown. Governor, good to have you with us.
Yeah, great. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you've vowed to get the state from under federal control and to go to the Supreme Court if necessary. And it's pretty clear from the papers that you filed that this is now a distant memory, at least as far as the overcrowding goes, in your judgment. But we still have that Supreme Court affirmed decision that the arbitrary numbers are not where they're supposed to be. Design, capacity is what we're talking about here. There's still too many prisoners.
Well, you use the word arbitrary, I think, very wisely. The so-called design capacity is not a description of the current state of affairs. The prisons, I am advised, now I'm not going to visit the 33 prisons, but I'm being advised that they're not overcrowded. There is 43,000 fewer prisoners than there were just a few years ago. This is the biggest prison release in the United States. So we're doing very substantial things. That's number one. Number two, I said the prison crisis emergency is over. That doesn't mean everything's perfect. I mean, nothing's perfect at this radio station or in the Roman Catholic Church or the Army or anything else. But we are taking reasonable and bold steps to provide outstanding, and I underline outstanding, health care. In California, the budget used to be about $7,000 per inmate, which is what it is for the average citizen. It's now closer to $15,000, twice what the average citizen has, far higher than the average prisoner in the other part of the United States or the world. I don't think this has gotten through clearly because of the adversarial system, and whatever I say, you'll have someone on for the prison law office and he'll say the exact opposite. But I have no reason not to report to you the facts as I understand them. And the facts are that California is spending more on prisoner health care than any other prison system in the world. And there's little doubt, I'd say there's no doubt, that for someone coming off the streets for most of these crimes, they will get far better care in prison than they got before, and far better care after than they'll get when they're released. And we're doing an incredible job, and we're not doing it just by ourselves. We have a receiver who hired 12,000 employees, threw away the book of civil service rules, took off the cap on spending, and has hired anybody he wanted that he can find and get to work in the prisons. And on the mental health, we've got a master who's filed 25 reports of 500 to 600 pages each that have detailed all the nits and gnats of what's going on in mental health care. And there's no question that California is spending billions and billions because of these lawsuits and because of the court orders. And yet to hear the plaintiffs, it's like we're just thumbing our nose at the court. This is not true. I mean, everything that's humanly possible to make life better for California prisoners were doing. And this is not some Ayatollah regime. I mean, I'm the guy who appointed Rose Byrd. I'm a progressive kind of person. And I'm here to tell you that our prisons have managed an incredible situation left to me, by my predecessors. It was a mess.
I think the numbers have been pretty impressive, if I may say so, going back to your days as Attorney General when this all started. But I'm talking about in reduction, of course. But and we have spent millions. In fact, you called it nitpicking, and you stood there with all those reports. So I just want to get to a point, though, Governor, and that is.
What's the point?
It's also been pointed out, though, that you still have overcrowding and you still have more suicides, actually, than any state does.
Wait a minute. That's not true. We have, first of all, we have experts who've looked at our suicide prevention and said it's one of the best in the country. Now, we can't stop people from committing suicide. Prison is a pretty depressing situation. How many people who are under our suicide prevention programs who are in mental health care committed suicide? How many in the general population? Suicide means a self-inflicted wound. That's different than a murder. So we are doing, as I'm being told, now you'll have our prison people on and you can interrogate them, but there's this thing, you know, it's a little frustrating here where we have honest people who are well experienced, we're throwing billions at the problem, we're being supervised in exacting detail by hundreds of lawyers and consultants and experts flying in from all over the country, wandering around the prisons at will. And yet, at the same time, they say, more. Well, we don't think you're doing enough. And not only do you want to spend more on health care, we want you to release 9,000 people. And I'd like Ms. Pedersulli to explain to you. She tells me we've already released people that are not so safe. So I think we've hit a balance point between the extreme of emptying our prison and the extreme of spending too much. So I'm trying to find the point where public safety is protected, where prisoners are handled properly, and we can get back to the business of drug treatment, rehab, education, and prisoner reentry, which is what I'd like to see our new prison director devote his time to, if we can just get behind us this interminable litigation.
New president director Jeffrey Beard, who was actually on the panel originally, actually head of corrections now, who was on that panel in 2007. I need to ask you, though, before we say goodbye here this morning, and appreciate the limited time we have with you, but for example, we got Alan Hopper, the ACLU, saying instead of sentencing reforms to reduce the number that are needlessly behind bars, we're spending more in the prisons, which means less for public schools and less for child care and all of that sort of thing.
Well, we're spending more money because these attorneys are persuading the judges that we should be spending the billions that we didn't spend 5 or 6 years ago. That's number one. And number two, he feels so confident that we can have more felons who have committed these serious and dangerous crimes out on the streets of Oakland or Berkeley or San Francisco. Well, that's a point he can make. He can make it in court. I am telling you, using my best judgment, and I've been around this game now, I'm headed into my 13th year as governor, I am not trying to keep people in prison one day longer than I need to. But I do want to respect the laws of California, what the people have enacted or the legislature, and I'm trying to thread the needle here between the public safety, the laws we have, and what the federal courts and these plaintiffs want to do. I think we've hit a point that is wise and that is sound. If the court and the Supreme Court, again, disregards all the expert testimony we're going to present to them, then these thousands of people will be released, and it'll be a continuing release because to hit the numbers they want will take an increasing release of people that my people tell me are better left where they are.
Are you concerned, finally, about the effect that realignment's had on possible rising crime rates?
Well, here's the other side. One group says there's not enough felons on the street. The other group says you've already put too many. And realignment is supposed to be the non-serious, non-dangerous, non-sexual. The ones that the prison law office wants out and the ACLU, they're not even among the nons. These are serious people. No one doubts that. So that's my answer on the new release. In terms of the other, look, it's a bold move here. This is the biggest change in our prison system in the last 35 years, and it's being managed very well. Do we have some failures? Yeah. But look, the probation department can supervise people as well, and if not better, than our parole people. That's what's happening. We're shifting from state parole to local county probation, and then it's up to them to either incarcerate, to provide drug treatment, or some other form of monitoring. It is a return to the community where the criminals came from. I think it's sound, and it's remarkable that we've had it so trouble-free. Now, in terms of crime statistics, they've gone up a little bit. Well, the crime goes up, the crime goes down. Experts still argue why that is. You know, the guy at Freakonomics, the author there, said it had something to do with abortion 20 years ago. Another person says it's the economy. Another person says something else. So that crime data is the subject of a lot of dispute. I don't think a one-year statistic can give you any confident conclusions. Just know this, that we are engaged in a very extensive alteration of our criminal justice system. I'm watching it carefully, and I would welcome any positive suggestions and help in how we can make it better.
Governor Brown, good to have you with us. Thank you so much. Governor Jerry Brown joined us from the state capitol. Let me tell you who's joining us for the rest of this hour. Terry McDonald, Undersecretary of California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, is with us also from Sacramento. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have Rebecca Evanson with us, who is staff attorney at the prison law office, and she's with us from their offices in Berkeley. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And let me also say good morning to Joan Petersilia, who is a criminologist and co-director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center and is with us from Stanford. And let me welcome you to the program as well. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Rebecca Evanson, well, you heard the governor, and essentially he made his case. He was almost trying to predict what you might say here. But the fact of the matter is, from his point of view, things are going along just swimmingly, and we need to forge ahead. What's wrong?
Well, the governor said about his prison system, nothing's perfect. And I think that's about the biggest understatement you could make. Care in the prisons has continued to be mired down because of overcrowding. The health care remains inadequate. The mental health care remains inadequate. And, you know, independent experts are, confirming this in reports that have come out and that are coming out in coming weeks. Death reports show a continued high rate of prisoners dying as a result of inadequate care, hundreds of lapses in the quality of care leading to prisoners dying about every 10 days, more than one every 10 days, solely because of inadequate care. And, you know, the suicide rate, you know, Governor Brown spoke about that. What he didn't say is that the suicide rate in California prisons is far higher than the suicide rate in other prison systems.
It's also going up, I believe, isn't it?
And they're going up.
Yeah.
And the reason is because, you know, while as a result of these court orders, the prison system has put in place procedures for dealing with this, the fact is they're just not following their own procedures. So you still have vacancy rates of up to 40% in key psychiatric personnel. And prisoners are waiting for care. They're not getting enough care because there are just too many prisoners for the number of doctors. And so you have this situation where, like in the suicides, for example, the experts are saying 75% of those suicides would have been prevented had psychiatric care been provided. So to say things are going well is really, a gross exaggeration. Now, have there been improvements? There have. And, you know, as the governor said, crowding has been reduced. And, it's significant. And another point about it that's significant is that while crowding has dropped and the prison population has dropped over the last 4 years as a result of this case, the crime rates have continued to drop. You know, the most current statewide crime rates show, which are from 2011, so it show that crime is continuing to drop. And, you know, what that tells us is not that reducing crowding causes the reduction in crime, but just that the prison population and crime rates, they're not linked that way. And the governor has a plan for how to reduce crowding the remainder of the way to meet the court's order. And that plan is sound. And he can do it. He can do it safely. He can do it without having any impact on crime rates. And so, you know, I guess my message to the governor would be...
Well, wait, let me just interrupt you there for a moment, because he's saying something very antithetical to what you just said. He said, essentially, we've let out sort of what I think has been described by Joan Petersilli and others as low-hanging fruit here. And if we let out any more prisoners, we're going to have serious felons out there, and public safety will be threatened.
Well, the governor also submitted a plan to the state, to the court. And, yeah, he did it under protest. But as a plan, essentially, it in many ways is common sense. First of all, it targets low-risk prisoners. 43% of the people in our prisons are low-risk. And what does low-risk mean? It means that they are highly, highly unlikely to commit another crime, you know, when they're released. And so, you know, that's a really important fact. Some people say, well, you know, we have a high recidivism rate in California, and yes, we do. And that's because we don't just release low-risk people. Every day we're releasing, you know, prisoners who run the whole gamut. But if you can target the low-risk people, that's a good thing.
Well, actually, let me bring Joan Petersilli in on this, criminologist and co-director of the Stafford Criminal Justice System, because I think... your statistics have borne out the fact that this has been massive reduction, the biggest in history of a prison population. And we're also talking about downsizing of parolees by 40,000. But in the overall picture of this, what is your sense of going further along the lines of what the plan that Governor Brown submitted, again, against his will, would do to public safety?
Well, I think when we looked at from the expert panel, which I chaired in 2007, we estimated that there were at least 20,000 prisoners that could be safely released at that time. Now going back and looking, those people have virtually all been released. So as we move up the spectrum and let more and more inmates released, we are getting into kind of bone and muscle, if you will, in terms of crime seriousness. Now, while she said there are low-risk people, the truth is, if you look at the risk assessment tool that, in fact, CDCR has developed, those people, 40% of them, will have a new arrest. So they're not low-risk in that we won't anticipate any future recidivism. And I guess my concern is, as we start letting out the more serious people, I actually agree that many more people could be released if we, in fact, invested in good reentry programs. But simultaneously, while we're, in fact, releasing them, we're cutting many of the very programs that they would need for success. So we've got a double whammy here in terms of public safety.
We may have a triple whammy, because we don't even know in terms of data. There's no real tracking of these prisoners who have been released under realignment, is there?
Right. There is no state-funded evaluation of the impacts of realignment. And we've got a triple whammy. What I thought you were going to say is not only are there the criminal justice programs being diminished, but our social service system generally, like community mental health clinics, education programs for the poor. I mean, a lot of the community resources that offenders could rely on as a safety net are also being cut. So I think as we go forward about who more can be released, it has to be that dual discussion, not only of who's getting out of prison, but what do they meet when they go back to the counties?
And I would just add to that. I mean, I think
that's Rebecca Evanson, yeah.
An important point to make. I would add to that, though, that the governor's proposal to stop reducing crowding is going to be costing the state $225 million a year. That's the cost of keeping these 9,000 people, 9,000 extra people in the crowded prisons. And so you know, the governor talked a lot about the bloated budgets, but his proposal is to bloat the budget even more. And if you just followed the court's order, there'd be a lot of money freed up, not just to cover that kind of rehabilitative programming, which it really should do, but also to go back into the general fund and pay for our schools. You know, and I also wanted to respond to the point that Joan made about the recidivism rates. Those rates include people who are being arrested for technical violations of parole. But when you look at among the low-risk population, how many people are arrested for crime, it's less than 10%. And then when you look at for violent crime, the number is way, way lower. It's an extraordinarily low rate.
Yeah, but there are still some numbers here that we have to grapple with. And let me bring Terry McDonald in, this Undersecretary of California Department of Correction and Rehabilitation. And Undersecretary McDonald, I'm sure you're pretty much in line with the governor's point of view, which we heard earlier here today about the prisons being in good shape and all of that. And yet there's concern about the numbers here. I mean, we've got close to 9,000 California inmates in out-of-state prisons. So we've got an extraordinary number of those who are imprisoned who are undocumented, illegal, whatever you want to call them. I mean, these are numbers that we are continuing to grapple with.
Certainly, and you're right. I do not only agree, I resoundingly agree with the governor, and I also agree with Dr. Peter Cilius, because we keep using this term, a low risk, but low risk is not no risk. And within that low-risk grouping of offenders are some very, very violent and dangerous offenders. For example, Charlie Manson scores in low risk. And so we have to put in true perspective what we're talking about here. And the prisons aren't, they're not held in a vacuum in society. Dr. Peter Cilio talked about infrastructures that aren't prison infrastructures, like education, like health care, like mental health care, substance abuse in the community. And when you have a prison system that is constitutional in its care of offenders, it's irresponsible to either A, continue to throw money at it, taking money from the overall general fund, or B, releasing offenders into the community who, let's be all be honest about this, there will be victims behind that.
Can I ask you, though, about what we're going to, if these 8,000 or so are going to be coming back, or a great number of them coming back to California from out of state? Governor Schwarzenegger allowed for them to be put out of state to sort of deal with the overcrowding, and now presumably they're going to be coming back?
Yeah, so the conditions that Governor Schwarzenegger put in his emergency proclamation no longer exist in California prisons. And I know that personally because I've grown up in the prison system. I've worked here for many, many years. And so I know the time of day when gymnasiums had triple bunks. I know when day room floor had beds on them. I know when inmates couldn't get into medical care. That's not the case today. And so it doesn't make sense to continue to rely on an emergency proclamation that doesn't exist. But what folks haven't really talked about is the infrastructure improvements that the California prison system's put in place. For example, we have a 1,700-bed state-of-the-art prison hospital that opens in July. Well, as those 1,700 beds come online, it makes sense to begin to bring California prisoners back to California, bring taxpayer dollars back to California, as we're building capacity in the system. California put forward a blueprint for how the California prison system should operate, and it was funded by the legislature. In that blueprint, we continue to drive towards improvements to our system. First of all, we standardize our staffing in the prison so that we can ensure inmates are getting to health care, to mental health treatment, to substance abuse treatment for rehabilitative program. We begin to restore some of the critically lost rehabilitative programs that Dr. Peter Cilia talked about that's so fundamental to public safety in our community to help these people with reentry as they go back out.
Let me ask you to hold that thought. Actually, what I want to do at this point, because we're coming up on a break, is invite listeners to join us. In fact, we welcome your involvement in this discussion. Any questions or comments you might have, our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, feel free to join the program. You can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments, reactions you might have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We'll continue with Terry McDonald, Rebecca Evanson, and Joan Peter Cilia after this. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about California's challenge of federal oversight of prisons. Governor Jerry Brown has declared that the prison emergency is over in California, and he's asked a federal court to lift the population cap that they imposed on state prisons and to remove federal oversight of inmate medical care. The governor says the state has done enough to improve conditions in prisons, and he says further that reducing the population would jeopardize public safety. We're analyzing the state's progress on prison reform, discussing the best path forward. We spoke earlier with Governor Brown. With us this hour, Terry McDonald, who is Undersecretary for Operations with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Rebecca Evanson, staff attorney with the Prison Law Office, whose suit, by the way, over unconstitutional health conditions in prisons led to the federal oversight. And Joan Petersilia, who is a criminologist and co-director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center. And we're going to go to your calls and emails. And by the way, you can join us a number of ways. You can email us forum at kqed.org or post any questions or comments you have right on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at kqedforum. I just want to get a couple of quick things on the record before I go to callers here. And Joan Petersilia, I want to go to you on this. You don't think that the feds are going to buy this, essentially, do you? I mean, we've lost about 100% of the cases so far in California.
You know, my sense is, I mean, yes, the state has lost 100% of the cases that it has filed before this panel. I think, though, for the first time, they really do need to look much more seriously than they have about current operations. So I don't think they will buy it. My gut says they won't. But I also think it's a new game in town. And they will be taking, I think, a new look at this. I think things have vastly changed since when we all got involved in this in 2006, 2009, and then 2011. And now here we are at 2013. It is definitely a changed situation.
And let me just ask you quickly, Terry McDonald. Some are saying this is the governor's actions are pretty much tied to a concession to the union because there have been layoffs of parole officers and correctional officers.
And this doesn't have anything to do with the union. This has to do with the fundamental legal question of federal court intervention of a constitutional system. And so essentially what we are saying and contend, and I think many people join us in this statement, is California is providing constitutional levels of health care to our offenders, and the federal courts should no longer intervene. And I agree with Dr. Petersilia, this is a changed system. Since we went to court originally, it started in 2006, we've got 43,000 fewer prisoners. We've invested up to $2 billion in infrastructure improvement in the past and going forward. I mentioned the prison hospital, but we've built clinics and mental health crisis beds and improvements across the system and continue to do that. Additionally, we spend approximately $2 billion a year for clinical staff, for medical staff, mental health staff, medication. This is not a system that's deliberately indifferent or cruel and unusual. It is a big system. There are times in which it's not perfect, but there's no constitutional violations. And so that's the core fundamental legal question.
All right, again, Terry McDonald's Undersecretary of Operations. I want to get your calls on, and we begin, Henry, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, if Charles Manson is considered a low-risk criminal, doesn't that suggest that the categories are kind of composed incorrectly? And I would like to ask if there might be a conflict of interest that the people making those categories are the ones that benefit from the categories, including a whole bunch of people. Yeah, I don't want Charles Manson on the street, but I'm pretty sure the category includes other low-risk people, too.
Yeah, Terry McDonald, let me go back to you on that.
Yeah, so and Dr. Petersilia can speak about this as well, that the risk tool we use is much like an insurance risk tool that you run through when they go to give you the cost of your life insurance policy. And it takes into account people's conviction history, arrest history, and age running their California rap sheet. And so as offenders age, and Charlie Manson's been in prison a very, very long time, he's an older man, and he hasn't committed any crimes because he's been with us for decades. And so when you talk about low-risk offenders, you can't just say 40% of them show up as low risk. You have to dig down into files and find out the true facts about it. So it's a tool that we've used, but it's not an absolute tool any more than your life insurance risk policy tool is absolute.
Let me thank the caller. And I have an email here from a listener named Juan who says, stop caging people for substances. I think the term prison industrial complex is more fitting. And Rebecca Evanson, how much do we really have in terms of prisoners who could be released who are there for drug-related crimes?
Well, if you take a look at the state's plan for reducing the prison population, one of their proposals is not admitting into prison people who are convicted of simple drug possession, petty theft, forgery, these kind of low-level crimes. Now, what we've done is to calculate what the impact would that be. By June of this year, they could reduce the prison population by about 2,400 people just using those categories. Now, there are a number of other categories that are in the state's plan. Nobody's plan includes releasing Charles Manson. You know, let's just take that off the table. That was, you know, that's a scare tactic, but that's not on the books here. The kinds of things that the state is proposing, which if they implement correctly, could completely eliminate the gap between the court-ordered crowding level and where they are now. They are things like taking their minimum custody inmates. These are people who are in prisons that don't have fences or gates, and giving them extra good time credits for good behavior. Things like giving extra credits to people who complete or drug rehabilitative programs, violence prevention programs, educational programs, people who get college degrees, giving them extra credits towards time off. Not taking these really short-term people into prison in the first place. There are people who come into prison still, even with realignment, who come in for these short stays, and those people really just end up in holding cells the whole time they're in prison. They don't benefit from any rehabilitative programs, and they are very disruptive to the running of good programs. So those are the kinds of reforms that's in the state plan, and as I said, implemented correctly, actually, the state could not only achieve the full population reduction that's required by the court order, but also bring back all those 9,000 people who are in out-of-state prisons, save that money, and still meet the court-ordered cap.
All right, let me bring in a caller who is joining us from Richmond, Virginia. David, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I've served on two different reentry policy councils under two different governors in the state. One of the questions that I've asked in both of those councils is, as we free up some funding by releasing prisoners early, why can't some of those dollars that are freed up be reallocated toward reentry programs to reinforce those evidence-based practices that are proven successful to reduce recidivism? And I noticed that we continue to spend minimally on reentry and maximally on increasing infrastructure. So my question is, what might it take? How might we approach releasing some of those funds or reallocating some of those funds at the state budget level to reentry?
I think an important question, Joan Petersilia.
Well, we have in essence done that through our realignment. The realignment law that was signed about 14 months ago now gives counties direct dollars to invest, hopefully, in evidence-based probation and what we now call basically kind of county parole, but it's run by probation. The problem with what we are doing is that it allows that money to be used discretionarily. So it can be used to hire more police officers. It can be used to put people on electronic monitoring. It can be used in a great many of ways other than prisoner reentry, which is what the caller is asking for. So we kind of got half a loaf. We actually did give a lot of money. $21 billion over the next decade will go to counties to fund community-based programs, but it's not locked in to reentry for offenders.
And let me ask you also, if I may, Joan Petersilia, because you've certainly done a lot of statistical analysis over there at the Stanford Criminal Justice Center, because it always comes up when we're talking about prison populations. What are the, do we have really a fix on the number of prisoners who are serving time now who are what you would call undocumented or illegal?
We know that about 7 to 9% of current California prisoners, and it goes up to as high as 11%, depending on how we calculate it, are here and are undocumented. So that is a population that I know the plaintiffs have suggested we could also be looking out for prison reductions.
Well, we could send them back, presumably, at least a lot of them, if they would be reabsorbed into their home country,
or right, take, but that's take quite it back. Controversial.
Yeah,
right.
It is indeed. Let me bring some more of your calls on. And Sunny is next. Sunny, you're
yes,
on. Good morning.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have a long list, but I'm going to begin it with. Are you aware?
Is this a new name for you, Jane? Sunny.
Well, I don't like to use my name because I'm a volunteer at San Quentin.
Ah,
but
okay.
Too late.
Sorry.
Okay. I don't know if you're aware of it, but the press is not allowed to go over to San Quentin to interview the inmates. That's number one. Number two, I was in Mern General Hospital the other day, and they brought an inmate from San Quentin in chains through the lobby, and I guess they were taking him back to the prison. I'd like to know how much the hospital, and I put that in quotations, cost the taxpayers, the new hospital that they built, that a prisoner had to go in chains to Mern General Hospital. I wonder if anybody has done any research on prisons in the European Union. I understand that there are prisons that don't even have such a thing as life without possibility of parole. And I would like to know why, in reentry, that many of these guys are sent back to from whence they came, and they get right back into the gangs again because they can't get a job. A lot of them don't want to go back, but it seems to be the rule, with few exceptions. And I was told by a guard the other day that a lot of new guys are coming in who were level threes in other prisons, but they dropped them to level two at San Quentin because of the housing situation. And number four, I would like to know if the governor has ever done an unannounced tour of San Quentin prison, which costs the taxpayers 2 to 3 times more to run than any other prison, but has the only volunteer programs. We must have over 1,200 volunteers who go over there, including myself, who work with the prisoners and try to help them with getting their GEDs and learning how to read and write and function when they're released. Number five.
Well, wait a minute. You've raised enough questions there. I think that we're going to have to stop. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to out you. I just recognize your voice because you've been a regular caller for so many years. But let me go to Terry McDonald on this, and particularly beginning with the fact that maybe the governor has not visited Quentin, or the fact that media are not allowed to go to Quentin.
Well, first of all, let me thank the caller for coming in to volunteer, you know, using volunteers across California to help offenders with prison adjustment and reentry services is important, so I want to thank you for your public service for that. You know, I'm not sure whether or not the governor has been to San Quentin. Remember, the governor was the governor before. Certainly his wife was there recently, and he's aware of the circumstances and the facility at San Quentin, so I don't think that that's an issue. I would like to answer the question, though, about medical care in the new medical facility. So the caller's right that, you know, we have inmates that have to go out into communities for hospital care across California, and that is not cheap. And also, it's a higher risk to move offenders into community hospitals because there's higher escape potential when you take folks out for medical care. So the medical facility in Stockton that's designed primarily for medical and mental health treatments affords the opportunity both for expanded health care, but also to reduce the cost of taking offenders out into the community.
It's also, let me bring you back into this, Rebecca Evanson, the concern that caller raised about there simply not being enough community resources, and they continue to dwindle or be reduced for prisoners to really find a life away from some of the bad influences that lead to recidivism. I mean, and we spoke earlier about how when prisoners are released, they're not necessarily monitored. The realignment program, for example, has a dearth of data in terms of what's happening and what kind of programs people are exposed to, and just in general.
Yeah, I think that it would be a wise investment to take some of the savings that we are seeing and that we will continue to see from reducing prison populations and put it into the kind of reentry programs that are really necessary to make sure that people who leave prison successfully reintegrate into society. I mean, we should all understand that a large portion of prisoners, regardless of what our case does or anything else, almost all the people who are in prison now are going to end up back in our communities. And if we're really concerned about public safety, we should be spending those dollars to make sure that that community reintegration happens smoothly. I did also want to comment on the question of the new prison hospital that's been built, because what Terry McDonald said earlier I thought was, you know, really accurate, which is that we're on a drive toward improvements in the healthcare system. We are on that drive, but we haven't gotten there yet. And, you know, this new prison hospital, it hasn't been built yet. They are estimating that the first prisoner will be put there on July 1st. and that it'll be filled by the end of this year. But we haven't seen any benefits from that yet in the healthcare system.
Well, I should add here that a federal judge is already moving, though slowly, to end the court-appointed receivership control of prison medical care because of improved conditions. So conditions, at least from that federal standpoint, have improved. And Joan Peters-Cilia, we've certainly reduced more prison numbers here in California, as we've said, than anywhere, though the suicides are also at a high point. How do we compare overall, though, in terms of prison conditions, California to other states, and just in general from your perspective?
Well, you know, in terms of our incarceration rate, we're about average for the country. So we always act like California is a high incarceration state. It actually isn't. And with its reductions, it's actually now fallen below the national average. But in terms of prison conditions, you know, I think we have to thank all the, you know, the prison law office and all of the litigants who have really brought our system to something that I think, you know, it's not perfect, as the governor said. But having visited prisons in the southern part of the United States, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, and walking through our prisons, we have a lot to actually be quite proud of. Our prison system looks, if you walk through most of our facilities, quite a bit better than they do in many southern states. Now, that isn't a standard I think we want to compare ourselves to. But it shouldn't be said that California has either the highest incarceration rate, the most overcrowded, or the most unconstitutional, because it's simply untrue.
Well, Governor, maybe somewhat using hyperbole, though, when he says they're gold-plated prisons.
Yeah, I don't think I'd go that far.
but certainly we compare well to most other states, or particularly the southern
we
states.
We do.
Yeah, okay.
Michael, can I add to that just briefly?
Yeah, Terry McDonald.
This last year we asked the American, besides asking national experts to come in and look at our health care and having the OIG look at medical care, we also asked the American Correctional Association to begin to come in and certify our prisons based on national metrics. And we did that with three prisons this last year in California. All three received very, very high marks, and I'm told by ACA the highest initial review marks ACA has seen. So from a national, asking outsiders to come and look in, and I've looked at other prisons, I have to agree with Dr. Peters-Cilia. We have a lot to be proud of in California.
Well, let me read some listener emails. Keith writes, until the prisoners have the opportunity to publicly voice their true concerns within the facility, the public has no real fair and honest input. Why does Governor Brown seem to not want to have oversight? These are people's lives we're dealing with. While they might not have a sane state of society, all of them, there are some very articulate people in prison who can share their own account of how they feel conditions are in the prison, and we can compare and contrast that to how we feel as a state and government and meet somewhere in the middle as far as being humane is concerned. This is a topic you can't sweep under the rug. In California, we cannot afford to have a failing and unaffordable education system as well as an overpriced and inhumane prison system. And an email from Terrence, who says, by classifying inmate parolees by their last offense to determine if they are nonviolent, non-serious, or non-sexual offenses, many inmate parolees are being released into the community who have these offenses in their background. They will receive little or no supervision under AB 109. The supervision they will receive is by probation officers who do not carry weapons, are not trained in the arrest and apprehension of serious or violent felons. As a practical matter, this moves the problems to county jails, court systems, and probation departments. Instead of one CDCR with whom to litigate these issues, there are now 58 counties with whom to thrash this out. There has already been a dramatic reduction of parole supervision at the county level. There is, in effect, no misdemeanor supervision and very little supervision of convicted felons. While many felons receive probation and drug treatment or other rehabilitative services in some counties, very few get this in other counties, who choose instead to vary their charging and sentencing practices to send a majority of convicted felons to state prison. Many three strikes and other lifers could safely be released into the community, but Marcy's Law and the cumbersome and time-consuming processes built into the law guarantee that they will be retained long past any point where they are a threat to public safety. Terry McDonald, get you a comment?
Well, I think that realignment did much for the state of California, because it drove the discussion to outside of just the state prison system, and it's got the county, the community, the locals, and all of us talking together. And so no longer is it just the state's responsibility to work on reentry services. It's the county's as well, and I think there are incredible leaders in the county. I mean, we have work to do to continue to focus on providing rehabilitative services going in there, but I can't agree with the statement that the counties are unable to manage offenders in their communities. Frankly, they came from the counties and they're returning to the counties, so working in a state-local partnership, I think it makes for better public safety.
Well, Joan Petersilia, you've been looking at 10 counties as part of your study. Let me get you to shed some light on this, if you would.
Well, we have actually been doing case studies and interviewing police chiefs, sheriffs, and the whole gamut. And the responses to realignment really goes from, yes, we can handle it, to please help us revise it. And I think the one thing the email mentioned, which is what everybody across those 10 counties wants as a revision, is that the parolees coming out would not be just classified based on their current offense, but they would be classified based on their prior criminal record. And I agree with that. I think we need to tweak AB 109 so that people coming out and realigned to county probation who have serious prior records should be kept back up at the state parole system.
Well, the way things are now, somebody could have, you know, a serious record in terms of violence or pedophilia, but they had a drug bust, and that's what goes out. That's their jacket, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think that that one part of AB 109 is simply wrong.
Let me bring another caller on from Sacramento. Gina, join us. You're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to say it sounds to me that the attorney for the prisoners isn't so much concerned about health care, because it sounds like from the prison lady that we've made a lot of improvements and spent a lot of my tax dollars, frankly, to do that. But it sounds like the prisoner attorney wants more prisoners on our streets. And frankly, that makes me concerned for my safety and for the safety of my two kids.
And you say what, Rebecca Evanson?
Well, I disagree with that. Our central concern is the health care in the prison. That's the subject of the case. And as I indicated earlier, health care remains well below constitutional standards. Prisoners are dying. And they're dying because, you know, you have these examples where somebody was on medication, life-saving medication on the streets. They come into prison. They don't get their medicine. 3 months later, without medicine, they die. Or, you know, the prisoner I spoke to a couple months ago, who had extreme pain, lost the use of his legs, couldn't move, couldn't walk, but kept going to the doctor, and the doctor kept giving him Advil till an abscess had eaten all the way through his spine, and he's now permanently paralyzed. Those kinds of things are what this case is aimed at eliminating. Now, for the second part of that question, you know, are we concerned about public safety? Of course we're concerned about public safety. We live in California, too. And we would not be proposing, nor would the state be proposing, any measure that would impact crime rates. But the truth is that the population of the prison, the crowding levels in the prison can be reduced without impacting crime rates. It's already happened. The population has already dropped significantly. Crime rates have also dropped. And the measures that we're talking about here, and let me remind you, all of the crowding reduction measures that we're talking about are the ones that are in the state's plan. And those measures have all been tested in other jurisdictions and have all been found to be completely safe.
Do you feel safer hearing that, Gina?
See, I don't feel safer. I don't think she can convince me that the people that they're going to let out of jail or prison are going to, you know, not commit a crime and not do something horrible in my community.
Gina, I thank you on that for that call. Terry McDonald, let's hear from you on that.
So I'd like to clarify what Rebecca keeps stating as the state's plan. It is not the state's plan. The state's plan is defined in the blueprint, which you can find online, and I hope folks take the opportunity to read it because it's a very comprehensive document about moving the California prison system forward. The state complied with the federal court order that said we had to give the federal court options to take the population down to 137.5. But the state's been very clear that we are constitutional. We do not believe it's necessary. We think it's unwarranted and can be unsafe.
Well, the governor said earlier on he did not want to submit that plan. He had
correct.
To. Yeah. Let me bring another caller on here, and thanks for waiting. Jim, you're on with us. Welcome.
Hi.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So I volunteer for a rehabilitation program and have gone into a number of prisons in Northern California. And the thing that I'm struck with is that rehabilitation is really at the core of these issues. And even though most of the people in the prison who work in the prison system want rehabilitation to happen, the system really isn't set up to really support it that well. Some of the prisons I go into may have 2,000 or 4,000 inmates, and there's a total of 4 or 5 classrooms total for all of them, for all of their programs.
I think I'm sorry. I was just going to say I think your point is extremely well taken. We are definitely in need of more resources, and we're definitely in need of more of an emphasis on rehabilitation. It used to be that prison was just for punitive purposes, but now we've come to realize that there can be rehabilitative programs, and they can be efficacious. Tiffany, let me get you on next. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I've worked for the Department of Corrections for the better part of 20 years, and I've actually worked at San Quentin, Old Folsom, two other maximum security institutions, and I have a whole lot to say, but I'm going to speak quickly to why I feel Governor Brown is strongly opposing federal oversight, and that goes to his involvement and very strong backing from CCPOA, California Correctional Peace Officers Association, which is a union. It's probably one of the strongest unions around, and correctional officers invest largely into that, and they back the governor to be reelected. So I feel that has a lot to do with why he's trying to keep the feds out. As far as,
Well, that charge has been made. I brought it up before, and I'm interested that you bring it up as somebody who's works as a correctional officer, and I thank you for contributing that to our conversation here. And it has been, I think, a important and illuminating conversation. To one extent, thanks to the guests we've had, first to Governor Brown, who was with us earlier on, and to Rebecca Evanson, staff attorney for the prison law office. Also had Terry McDonald with us, undersecretary for operations with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and Joan Petersilia, who is a criminologist and co-director of the Stanford Criminal Justice Center, and remind you that you can continue this discussion. In fact, we certainly urge you to do that by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, and trust that you will. In fact, we have another hour of forum coming up, but this is important public policy and affects everybody here in California, and we've had listeners on all over the country from Sirius who also are very concerned in many instances with these issues as well. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, owners of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.